Welcome to Bishop Sheridan Presents on the Catholic Radio Network. Bishop Sheridan Presents is a weekly roundtable discussion of events and issues facing the church and culture today. Bishop Sheridan Presents is a production of the Diocese of Colorado Springs and the Catholic Radio Network. And now, here's your host, Bishop Michael Sheridan of the Diocese of Colorado Springs.
Welcome, everyone. This is Bishop Michael Sheridan. Thanks for joining me in our program today. I'm very happy to be talking with Teresa Tomeo. And Teresa is a best-selling Catholic author and the host of her own radio show called Catholic Connection. It's heard on Ave Maria Radio and is syndicated by EWTN. And her show is heard, in fact, on KFEL, our local Catholic radio station. So very happy to have a radio personality with us. Teresa, welcome. Thank you for taking the time to be with us today.
Oh, Your Excellency, it's an honor. Thank you.
Great. Well, let me say a few words about you, Teresa, but then I want you to introduce yourself to our listeners by telling us your story. Really, Teresa is the author of a fairly new book, and that book, directed at women, is called Extreme Makeover. I think isn't that a TV show, Teresa? Extreme Makeover.
Yes, and that's actually where I got the idea from, and also from my own extreme makeover that God did in my life.
Right. The subtitle being Women Transformed by Christ, Not Conformed to the Culture. So we're going to have Teresa talk a bit about what's in that book, and I had the opportunity to read it quickly. I'm going to try to read it again, but I want to recommend that to women and men too, because Teresa has some wonderful insights. But Teresa, to begin with, why don't you fill us in a little bit on your own personal life, how you fell away a bit from the practice of the Catholic faith, you came back at really with a vengeance, thanks to the grace of God. So tell us a little bit of your own story.
Well, as you said, I was raised Catholic, and I fell in love with Jesus. Actually, my first real encounter with him was when I made my Holy Communion. I just felt a very strong connection to Jesus in the Eucharist, and that's really what kept me Catholic. I did fall away from the faith for many years, as you said, but I never left and joined another denomination and then came back. I just fell away from the church and just gradually got sucked into the culture. And I can't even remember ever having like a major difference with the church on an issue. I didn't, you know, buy into the contraception, the teaching on contraception or abortion, but then again, I didn't have full knowledge of what the church was teaching at the time. I knew the church thought it was wrong, but so I can't even say that I looked at this or that and said, oh, I'm not going to be Catholic. It was just a gradual drifting away. And what I found was that I was having so much success in my own life, whether it was high school, but working at the radio station, editing the newspaper, you know, winning debate and forensics contests, and then moving on to college and having a very successful college career with internships and all kinds of things at big market radio and TV stations, I just didn't feel that it was God that was doing anything. I felt it was all me, and I had forgotten, you know, what I learned in 8 years of Catholic school. And when I look back now, I realize that it was the grace of the sacraments that were buried within me that kept me Catholic, and you know, God was always calling and tugging on my heart. Yeah, I went on to college and had a very successful career in college. I graduated as the outstanding journalism graduate from Central Michigan University, which is still considered a top journalism school. I did a lot of different things in college, worked on the college newspaper, you know, had, as I said, a number of internships at big stations. Graduated in 1981, started working right in my hometown of Detroit, which is unusual. But as you probably guess, you know me and you know my book, so you know I'm a type A personality. So I started right out in the big wigs in the big market and just worked my way up from 7 years in radio as a radio news person, making the switch over to TV in 1988, and went into another realm of stardom that I really wasn't prepared for because I wasn't grounded in Christ. I'd been married at that point for about 7 years, met my husband pretty quickly after I married from college. He, too, was raised Catholic. He, too, was very career-oriented in a different field in engineering. But the two of us, really, we were very happy. We thought, okay, if we can get up and go to Mass on a Sunday, that's fine. You know, we did get married in a Catholic church, but that's what you do. You're Italian, you're Catholic, you get married in a Catholic church. But God was never really the center of our lives, and that started to take a very dramatic and very negative toll on our lives fairly quickly. And we came very close to divorce at one point. I was very successful, anchor woman, winning awards, yada, yada, yada. My husband was moving up the engineering firm. And lo and behold, a mutual friend introduced him to a men's Bible study, and he felt that something was missing in our life, and he went to the study, and he rediscovered the Catholic Church by reading the Old Testament, started taking classes at Sacred Heart Major Seminary and studying theology. About a year after that, and God's timing is always perfect, because what happened was the Lord really prepared my husband's heart to be patient, you know, for me and what I was going through. I lost one of my very prominent TV positions, and it just threw me for a loop. Here I was putting everything I had and my whole existence into my job. Everything was my job. I ignored my marriage. I ignored, you know, my family. It was just, I got to do this career thing because that's what you're supposed to do, and you're just supposed to, you know, damn the torpedoes full speed ahead. And then overnight, they kick you out the door. That's what happens in the business. My contract was up for renewal. They decided for whatever reason, they never really have to tell you why, that, you know, okay, we're going to go for a blonde or a brunette, another brunette, or we're just looking for something a little bit different. And so all of a sudden, I had a period before me of nothingness. My marriage was falling apart. My whole identity was in my life as a TV star, a news person, not as a Christian at that point. And I didn't know what to do. And so it really, at a last-ditch attempt, and I'm really shortening this up, you know, a little bit more detail from reading my testimony in the book, after about 6 months of being unemployed and fighting with God, because, of course, I was really mad at God, even though I hadn't spoken to him in many years, which I think is so egotistical. I should have been struck down dead about 1,000 times. But I finally said, okay, Lord, if you're the Lord I met when I made my first Holy Communion, come back into my life and, you know, show me, because I'm lost. I don't know what to do. And so after saying that prayer, gradually the Lord started to help me in terms of where I was supposed to go, what I was supposed to do. And he did put me back on the air at the ABC affiliate. And once he did that, though, I started to notice some change, a big change in the industry, as the scales fell off my eyes. In the meantime, my husband and I were going to counseling, we're healing our marriage, we're getting more into our faith, and I start seeing all these things that are wrong with the media, and then I decided about, I was on the ABC affiliate for about 5 or 6 years, and I moved to a secular station, radio station, as a news director. And I decided at that point that I just couldn't do it anymore. I couldn't justify making a living from an industry that was just getting so bad. And so I walked away from the secular media in 2000, started Teresa Tomeo Communications, started speaking about media issues. Al Cresta hired me in 2002, and then, of course, the rest, as they say, is history. My show became syndicated about 6 or 7 years ago, and God has me all over the place. And every time I talk about it, every time I give my testimony, it still amazes me.
Well, that is quite a story. And I want to say, I heard you say, pronounce your last name for me. I think I said it incorrectly.
No, actually, you said it correctly in terms of the Italian pronunciation. The correct Italian pronunciation is Tomeo. Unfortunately, they've Americanized it, and my family has adapted to that, so they say Tomeo. But actually, it sounds much prettier the correct Italian way, Tomeo.
T-O-M-E-O.
E-O, correct.
Mm-hmm. All right. So in 2000, Teresa, you created this Catholic media ministry, and you've written a number of books, correct?
Correct. This is my latest, Extreme Makeover. I've also written my complete testimony book, which is Newsflash, My Surprising Journey from Secular Anchor to Media Evangelist. And my very first book, Noise, was published by Ascension Press back in 2007. And we just hot off the presses last week, a totally revised edition of Noise with all new statistics and updated research on media influence.
Wow. You were influenced quite a bit, weren't you, in your college days with feminism, ideological feminism?
Mm-hmm. And very much.
Did that contribute a great deal? You talk about it in your book, I know, but did that contribute a great deal to your sort of own drifting away from the practice of the faith?
Oh, sure. I mean, absolutely. When you're, you know, caught up in the midst of this, and when you're not grounded in your faith, and the funny thing is I had a really good grade school education, Your Excellency. The nuns were very good, and we had great lay teachers, too. And I think that's why I totally got what the sacrament of Eucharist was. I mean, I just knew that was Jesus, and I just fell head over heels in love with them. But the tug of the world is very, very strong. I should say the yanker, the pull of the world. And by the time, you know, in that day and age, I graduated from grade school in 73, high school 77, and so that's at the height, you know, 4 years after Roe v. Wade, that's at the height of the Gloria Steinem, Helen Gurley Brown days. You know, a woman needs a man like a fish needs a bicycle, that whole kind of attitude. Oh. So, yeah, I mean, our whole thing in college was, you know, it's all about you and do what you can. It's all about your career, and if you meet a guy and get married, great, but really, that's not important. It's all about you and what you want. So definitely, very strongly. And the funny thing is, I said I was never going to get married. you know, if you want to make God laugh, make plans. But 2 weeks after I graduated, I meet this Italian, you know, handsome Italian-American man, and boom, you know, I fell head over heels in love. So that should have been a clue that things were going to go as I had planned my whole life. But, you know, some of us are a little bit more hard-headed than others.
Right. Just a few days ago, there was the annual March for Life in Washington, this year on January 23rd, because the 22nd fell on a Sunday. Before we went on the air, Teresa and I were talking about her being present at that march. I certainly would be very interested, I think our listeners would be too, of your experience, because I was not able to go this year myself, your experience of the march this year.
Well, it just keeps getting better in terms of the young people and the people that are involved in this movement. It was bigger than last year. I spoke with Nellie, and we also got pretty much an official statement from Washington, from the police, the park police there at least, who were saying it was well over 400,000. They're saying between 400,000 and 500,000. So the numbers are just very, very encouraging.
And that is much. Those are much higher numbers than I've ever heard, aren't they?
Yeah. Well, last year we did have 400,000.
Oh,
I've been
okay.
Covering Free WTN,
okay.
Yeah, for the last about 6 or 7 years doing their television coverage along with Damon Owens, and it's been increasing every year. But last year was the biggest up until this year. Last year was 400,000, and now we have between 400,000 and 500,000. And, of course, in San Francisco, they had 50,000 plus. But, you know, it really is a bittersweet moment because you are so energized, and it's really that shot in the arm that those of us in the pro-life movement need to be together in fellowship and sharing and you know, walking arm in arm for the most important cause in the world. But at the same time, you realize why you're there. And when you look at the numbers, just in abortion alone, over 54 million since 1973, and then when you think about the devastating fallout to women, to families, to men, to society, I mean, it's endless. And so that sort of takes your breath away when you realize that here we are now entering into our 40th year of this Holocaust. And so it's a great thing to do. I would highly encourage it, if you've never been there, to get on a bus and go down or hop on a plane, because you'll never ever forget it. You'll make friends for life, and it will be the thing that will keep you going. It's kind of like that, you know, the energy bar that gets you up in the morning. If you go once a year to this event, you're recharged, you're rejuvenated, and you're ready to do another long year of pro-life battles. But it's a great experience, and I absolutely love covering it. And I love using my reporting skills to do interviews about these really in-depth issues that don't get covered in the press. And I love talking to people like yourself or Cardinal-designate Dolan, who I had the chance to interview, Cardinal Wuerl, and other really wonderful leaders who are doing what they can on the front lines to make a difference in the pro-life movement. Because the media don't give you or the archbishops the audience that you deserve to really represent the people in your communities. And that, to me, is extremely frustrating. So the fact that I can do that on EWTN and do it in depth, live coverage, I really see my talents that God gave me coming full circle.
I'm sure you have some thoughts on the recent decision of Health and Human Services to, as Archbishop Dolan has said, at least give us 1 year to figure out how we can violate our consciences.
I don't know where to begin with that, Your Excellency, because I don't think any of us were surprised, you know, but we were hoping that the exemption would have been made a little bit broader. I mean, Cardinal-designate Dolan had met with the president, you know, prior to this decision coming out, and really talking to him. So many people wrote so many wonderful letters and sent in so many, so much evidence and information and research when they had that open period for public comment that was made available. And I feel like they didn't even look at it, that they just did that. Okay, we have to open it up for public comment. And only God knows what's in their heart, but based on what I've seen coming out of these different politicians, I really, you know, we shall know them by their fruit. I highly doubt if they really took any of that information into consideration, because if they really, really cared, and if Kathleen Sebelius knows anything about her Catholic faith, and if she really cared about women, she would look at some of the evidence that was put before her. And I'm heartbroken, I'm devastated, but at the same time, I really see a Romans 8:28 situation in here. I was talking to my own Archbishop, Archbishop Vigneron, who's an amazing warrior for the faith. And I said to him on the air, I said, you know, Your Grace, I really believe that this is going to be our breakthrough moment. I really think this is going to rally the troops, and we are going to rally behind our bishops like never before.
Well,
enough is enough.
I think you're right, Teresa. Yeah, I was very disappointed to see that come down, but at the same time, you're right. This is going to be our moment. We're going to have to take a quick break, Teresa and listeners, and we'll come back to continue the conversation with Teresa Tomeo. Thanks.
ColoradoCatholicHerald.com is the website of the award-winning Colorado Catholic Herald newspaper. For the latest Catholic news, both at home and around the world, log on to ColoradoCatholicHerald.com. The Colorado Catholic Herald, bringing the Catholic world to you.
Today's episode of Bishop Sheridan Presents is archived at Colorado Catholic Herald Online. Just go to www.ColoradoCatholicHerald.com and click on the audio video link on the left side, and you can listen to every episode of Bishop Sheridan Presents.
Welcome back. This is Bishop Sheridan, and I'm talking today with author and radio personality Teresa Tomeo. Her radio show is called Catholic Connections. You can hear it on Ave Maria Radio, syndicated on EWTN. Teresa, once again, thanks for being with us. And your latest book, Extreme Makeover, Women Transformed by Christ, Not Conformed to the Culture. I want to talk a little, well, not a little bit, quite a bit about that book. But during the break, you connected that to what we were talking about with regard to Health and Human Services, in edict that the mandatory inclusion of contraceptions, contraceptives that are also in some cases abortifacients, will be mandated, right, for all insurance carriers. That includes those who insure departments or entities of the Catholic Church. Maybe not Catholic priests themselves, but certainly our perhaps our schools, our hospitals, Catholic charities, any of these places that are run by the Catholic Church, operated by the Catholic Church, but do not serve exclusively Catholics or hire exclusively Catholics. We tried to make our voice heard to Ms. Sebelius of Health and Human Services, to the current administration. And what we got back, I'm saying this just for the benefit of any listeners who might not be aware of this, what we got back is, no, you've got to do this, but you've got some sort of one-year grace period, I guess, to figure out how to do it. And, I mean, what a slap in the face, what a put-down of religious liberty, of the freedom of conscience of people. I don't even know how to explain it. I don't know that you do either, but the book, I want to tie that in, because the book that you've written, while it doesn't necessarily speak directly to that action, has information important to people who we now have to make our voices heard. We've got 1 year to figure out what to do about this, and I think your book, and I call it a somewhat little book, I don't want people to be daunted by this. It's just about 200 pages. Mm-hmm. So it's not very long. It's an easy read, but it's filled with very helpful information. So what prompted you to write this book? I know you've written a number of other books. How did this one come about?
Well, this one came about because the first book I wrote, as I mentioned earlier, Noise, is all about the media and media influence in general. I go through TV, radio, film, advertising, music, and how it affects families and what. And there's an action plan at the end of each chapter for each different media outlet and what people can do. So I gathered all the most recent statistics regarding media influence on those various aspects of the media. And when I was doing that book, and in the meantime, as I'm speaking around the country at women's conferences, I'm just noticing the culture getting worse, and how women, and looking at this research, how women are among the primary targets, or mainly the primary target of much of the garbage that's put out there on the airways, whether it's the objectification of women, the over-sexualization of girls, the way women are portrayed on TV in terms of this push to be sexually promiscuous, and on and on and on. And then, of course, knowing what I know now that I didn't know before about the damages from birth control and also abortion and the fallout from that, I'm thinking this is, you know, somebody's got to put together in one comprehensive book a resource tool so people can go to these various things and say, okay, what is so bad about, what's this radical feminism thing? What do they mean, radical feminism versus new feminism? So there's a chapter on that. Well, what do you mean, contraception? What's bad about it? You know, why can't people, quote unquote, you know, plan their families? And so I put a whole chapter in there about the contraception deception, the abortion distortion, because the majority of people, and I know you know this as a leader in the church, even if they're Catholic, and many Catholics, and we know that, I mean, look at the case of Sebelius. She claims to be a Catholic. either don't know or don't want to. In Sibelius's case, I would say because of her exposure to these things that I'm not sure, and I'm not a bishop, you are, I'm not sure she would fall under by no fault of their own category. I highly doubt it. Again, only God knows what's in her heart. But most Catholics have been poorly catechized and have not made the effort on their own yet to really look and understand this issue of contraception. So even now with this mandate coming out, a lot of people are saying, well, you know, what's the big deal? I mean, you know, what is it? Only 2-3% of Catholics use NFP. Everybody else is contracepting. We haven't been taught. We've accepted this now, like we accept toothpaste and, you know, deodorant. So I really felt strongly that there had to be information in there. Because I know when I started to learn, and issues I had in my own physical well-being because of contraception, I contracepted for many years and had to go through a whole, you know, cleansing of my soul and my body of all that stuff. But when I found out how women were being lied to, I was appalled, and I was appalled at a number of levels. I was appalled as a journalist that journalists weren't putting this information out there, which was readily available to from a number of different organizations, many of most of which are not even Christian or even Catholic. I couldn't believe it, so I had to put this together.
Teresa,
so
when you say women were lied to, what do you mean?
Well, women were lied to in a number of ways. They were told that a lot of these birth control pills are safe. The birth control pill itself, back in 2005, was determined to be a group 1 carcinogen by the World Health Organization. We were told that abortion was safe and that abortion wasn't a child. It was actually just a clump of cells. When women are not given the information to this day when they go into the majority of abortion facilities around the country, not only what can happen to the child in the womb, but they're not told about the numerous problems that they will probably have after they walk out of that abortion mill, and that it's not a simple solution to a problem. So on and on. Also, sexual promiscuity. This was sold as freedom, when in fact it turns into bondage, because a woman then, it affects her self-esteem, it affects her psyche, not to mention the fact that she's opening herself up to sin and to all kinds of sexually transmitted diseases, and women are the ones who suffer most from these sexually transmitted diseases. So on and on and on and on. Everywhere I was turning, Your Excellency, I'm seeing this stuff, and I'm like, why aren't we being told this? This is craziness. And it's sold as freedom. It's sold as, you know, this beautiful life. But if it's a beautiful life, why is there so much misery attached to it? Why do I constantly run into women who regret the fact that they had an abortion, or regret the fact that they contracepted, who felt used in relationships? Myself, my own experience. It's insanity. And it's kind of like that old saying of Einstein's, you know, insanity is doing the same thing over and over again,
right,
but expecting different results. And that's what Planned Parenthood is doing. They're just trying to package it differently. So they come up with all these fancy terms like choice and reproductive freedom and reproductive health and preventative services. And but the bottom line is what they're saying is our fertility is a disease. And that our bodies are nothing but, you know, but mere objects for gratification. And so I just said, you know, whatever I can do, and the only thing I can do is use my talents. I'm a good writer. I'm very, as you probably noticed by now, extremely outspoken, and I can talk very, very quickly, and I'm very good at putting information together. So I have to be responsible for what I know. I know the media, I know how to work in the media, and I know how to project that on the airwaves and at a platform, and of course with a pen. Or with, you know, up to date now with a computer. So this is what I try to do. This is why I wrote this book, my own extreme makeover, but also women and men and society need this information. We have got to break through. We have got to stop walking around like a bunch of, you know, of bumps on a log and accepting everything the media tell us, all the sound bites, all the commercials about Ella and Yaz and making it seem so wonderful. And in terms of we're literally killing ourselves. We've already wiped out 54 million babies in this country alone, not to mention the untold damage it's taken on women and relationships and society and the drain it's causing on the economy. And you know, a friend of mine, Father Frank Buffone, says you can't practice vice virtuously, and that is so, so true. And I just really am tired of it, and I've got to speak out. If I don't, I'm going to explode. Plus, I'm 100% Italian, which adds to the whole mix. So there you go.
Well, Teresa, we need more spokespersons like you. Do you find that your work, and perhaps the work of others, maybe clergy and laity, is making a difference? Are things looking up in your, from your perspective?
I would say yes and no. And what I like to do is base it on the emails I get from people, and also the women and men I run into around the country, Your Excellency, at my speaking engagements, because there's so many people that come up to me and say thank you. Thank you for being an articulate voice for our faith. Thank you for having the knowledge and sharing it with others. And I just know from Catholic Radio in general, and Al Cresta and the other personalities will back this up, that we get testimonies every week from people who are hearing something on Catholic Radio about their faith that they didn't hear before. It's like there's this light going off, and they're saying, oh my gosh, I never knew that. And they're getting very excited, and they're getting very fired up, and they want to get involved. So do I think we're making a difference? Absolutely. Do I think it's an uphill battle? Are we swimming upstream? Do we have a heck of a lot of work to do? Yes to that as well.
Okay. I think, and you can comment on this, I think one of the greatest helps that we have in the pro-life cause is the development, the sophistication of ultrasound. It seems to me like more and more women now, and some by reason of law in some states now, are seeing images of their unborn baby prior to their making a decision for abortion, and that's making a tremendous difference. Is that what you hear, and is that your experience?
Oh, absolutely, and I do a lot of work and volunteer, and I'm very involved in a lot of different pregnancy resource centers around my area in suburban Detroit, and that absolutely makes a huge difference, and that's why we have to help these centers get the ultrasound machines. But I also think it's not just that. We have everything on our side. First of all, God, okay, number one, but we have the science. We have the common sense. I mean, you know, this is the thing that drives me nuts. And I was trained as a journalist. I was trained to connect the dots and, you know, put the information together and so people can form an opinion. And how can you have, in one sense, a law that says, for example, God forbid if a pregnant woman is driving and she gets hit by a drunk driver, and in many states now, that drunk driver is going to be charged with two cases of murder, right?
Right,
two charges
right.
For the baby and for the unborn baby and for the mom. And then in that same state, in most states, you can still walk into an abortion mill up to 9 months and kill that child. Okay, so is it a baby or isn't it a baby? It's not a tree, it's not a fish, it's a child, it's a human being.
Well, this is proof of the dictatorship of relativism, because it seems
right.
It's a baby if you want it to be, and it's not a baby if you don't want it to be.
And also getting back to the medical evidence until in the ultrasound and all this other stuff. I mean, the fact that the thing that drives me nuts. So how many times, I'm sure you've gone in for, you know, maybe minor medical procedures. I can remember I had some minor foot surgery about 10 years ago, and you would have thought I was going in for open heart surgery or for some sort of a major transplant. I was in there for 45 minutes, nothing but the doctor telling me this could go wrong and this could go wrong and this is the anesthesia, this is going to happen, blah, 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 blah. And this is, again, just minor foot surgery that was outpatient. Abortion is the only procedure where women, and this is a surgical procedure, are not getting complete information about the procedure itself, do not consult with their doctors in most cases, unless they're going to a hospital, which isn't where most of the abortions are performed. They go into these facilities, that most of which are not up to code because they don't have to be, and they go in there and they get a procedure, and the only time they see the doctor is when that baby is being removed from their womb and torn from limb to limb. If this were any other medical procedure, this would be the lead story on every newscast, and it would be the front page of every newspaper. This makes me ill as a journalist that this is ignored. If you look at the Gosnell case in Philadelphia, now you mean to tell me that this is just one guy that's doing this? As it unfolds and some of these pro-life journalists are looking into this, we find out that this guy is connected to three or four other abortion mills around the country. And we find out that everybody from the top on down in Philadelphia at the time knew what the heck was going on and turned their back to it and completely ignored it. This was in the report from the prosecutors that were putting this information out, from the grand jury. They had this information. This wasn't some religious organization that put this out. And so, okay, if I'm a journalist, this is how it normally works. If you have a problem that is some big controversy, for example, let's look at, you know, what happened in the church. Started with one or two scandals. The Boston Globe investigated and found that it was a huge problem. Now what is the church doing? The church has been doing a great job, I do believe, at addressing a very serious situation. That is the quality when you do journalism well. If you're looking at a big issue, if it's handled appropriately, now I'm saying there's been a lot of bias with the pre-scandal, and that's a whole other story, I understand that. But as a journalist is really doing his or her job, when they see a crisis, that's usually, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire. And in this case, with Gosnell being so egregious in so many ways, and the money he was making, and the women that were hurt, any good reporter worth his or her salt should have been investigating the industry, not just one abortionist.
That's right. I'm speaking today with Teresa Tobio, the author of Extreme Makeover, Women Transformed by Christ, Not Conformed to the Culture. And we will be back in just a moment.
Today's episode of Bishop Sheridan Presents is archived at Colorado Catholic Herald Online. Just go to www.coloradocatholicherald.com and click on the audio video link on the left side, and you can listen to every episode of Bishop Sheridan Presents. The Colorado Catholic Herald is now on Twitter. The Colorado Catholic Herald, your primary source of news and events from around the diocese, is now on the social media platform of Twitter. Get advance notice of upcoming headlines, breaking news, and special event coverage. Our handle is the @CCHERALD. That's @CCHerald. So join us on Twitter. And now we return to a very special episode of Bishop Sheridan Presents.
We're back. This is Bishop Michael Sheridan, and I'm speaking with Teresa Tobio. Teresa is an author, host of a radio show, Catholic Connections, and our conversation today is very much focusing on her new book, Extreme Makeover, Women Transformed by Christ, Not Conformed to the Culture. It is published by Ignatius Press. And Teresa, anything you want to tell our listeners about the availability of that book? I think like most books, you could get it almost anywhere, right?
Yeah, I believe it's still actually on sale on Amazon.com, also on the Ignatius Press homepage at Ignatius.com. You can also go to my website, TeresaTomio.com, which will direct you right to Ignatius. So any of those, Ignatius.com, Amazon.com, or even my website, TeresaTomio.com.
Very good. And I know, Teresa, again, we were talking a bit about this during the break. You, like myself and so many others, are very, very concerned about what the Department of Health and Human Services has done in telling us Catholics, essentially, we don't care. You're going to have to violate your consciences. You are going to have to provide and pay for contraceptives, abortifacients in the insurance coverage of your employees, and we don't care. We don't care. Now, what this is, well, I stumble all over myself when I even try to understand
and
explain.
I know, it's just so upsetting. You can't even.
Well, it's unbelievable. It's outrageous to think that religious liberty, which is built into the foundation of our country, into our Constitution, is just being trampled on. We're being told it doesn't make any difference what you Catholics believe. You're going to do what we tell you.
Well, you know, I don't think any of us, you know, should be surprised by this. Certainly we saw the handwriting on the wall. And if you look at even just take Kathleen Sebelius and her past record and in her previous political life in terms of she was associated often with one of the most notorious abortionists in the country. So why should we be surprised that she would be pushing this agenda? And she's also been quoted as saying that the Catholic Church wants to push women back 20 or 30 or 40 years because of their stance on artificial contraception and abortion. So, I mean, we shouldn't be surprised by this, but at the same time, in terms of how far they've gone, this basically they're defining religion, which I mean our founding fathers must be doing flips, rolling over, doing cartwheels in their graves. I mean this is just so far from what they ever intended, our founding fathers intended. And the frightening thing is that they're telling us, well, you know what, you Catholics and you other Christians, church is what religion is, just church, just praise and worship, that's it, you just go in there, shut the doors and leave us alone. But what people don't realize is that they're already starting to infringe on that. If you look at the different efforts around the country to promote so-called same-sex marriage, if you think that this administration is going to stop with this, I don't believe it, because I think the next step is going to be very similar to Canada, and Canada is very close to me here in the Detroit area, and we hear stories from our listeners about this all the time, talking about promoting the sacrament of marriage and speaking out against so-called same-sex marriage is considered hate speech. And I don't think we're too far behind. And we certainly have to realize that when we look at just what happened just recently out of the Department of Health and Human Services. The fact that this is so blatant, this is really just saying, you guys better, you know, this is what we're going to do. And the Bishop of Pittsburgh actually put out a very strong statement and said, not only is it a slap in the face, but they're basically saying to the Catholic Church, the hell with you. And that's a direct quote from the Bishop of Pittsburgh. And I think he's absolutely right.
I drifted there just listening to you talk about this. What is so surprising and as well as disturbing to me is how many Catholics will write to me and say, but Bishop, we have separation of church and state. This is all a matter of politics. Recently here in the state of Colorado, we asked all of our Catholics to sign postcards that were delivered to our to our state senators and representatives regarding the upcoming attempt to once again legislate civil unions, which is essentially same-sex marriage. We defeated it once. They're going to try it again here in the state. And I had a number of people say, oh, well, this is terrible to bring politics into the church, to look at these things as simply political issues because they are the concern of politicians. It seems like we've got a long way to go to help many of our Catholic people understand this is not political. We're talking about the natural law. We're talking about what it means to be a human being. We're talking about marriage as that was created by God. But I sometimes am shocked by the number of messages I get from Catholics.
I am too, Your Excellency. I get this all the time, and it's very frustrating to me. And this is happening still on Catholic radio, and you're hearing it in the churches. So, again, you're right, we have a long way to go. But I think, too, there's been very, very poor, not just Catholic catechesis, but I think there's been a dumbing down of true civics and history and government in terms of understanding how government operates. And it drives me nuts when I see the media talking about separation of church and state in the First Amendment. It's not in the First Amendment. Those words are not even in the First Amendment.
Of course they're not.
But the media repeat this, and the media are not only biblically illiterate and illiterate when it comes to subjects of faith and morals, but they're also illiterate about their own, you know, the amendment that protects their own industry. This is how bad it's gotten. I mean, we are in an age of tweeting and Facebook and instantaneous messaging and very short attention spans. And I'm not saying that, you know, our internet is bad, because the church is using it very wisely, I believe. And the Holy Father just put out a great World Communications Day statement, and the last few ones he's put out the last 3 or 4 years have been about, you know, engaging through the internet. Of course, this most recent was about silence. But what I'm saying is that people don't even stop to think. They hear a soundbite on the news and they react to it, or they believe it immediately. People need to do some homework and they need to educate themselves. So we've been poorly catechized, and I'm using that, you know, that term very widely, not only faith-wise, but also just in how our government operates and in history. And getting back to this whole thing about politics, well, what's the church then? Just a place to play bingo and to go and hear a nice sermon on Sunday? I mean, how do you form a conscience? How do you decide what's right and what's wrong? Are you just going to pick up the newspaper, God help us, and read the New York Times or USA Today and say, this is how I form my conscience? But that's what people think. I mean, how many people know what the Catechism says about forming your conscience? But see, this is the thing. We will spend hours, you know, on eBay or looking for that perfect pair of shoes or that coupon. But for crying out loud, you can get the whole Catechism online for free. You think anybody would bother to look it up? It drives me absolutely nuts. And sometimes and this is my Italian coming out again, but I get mad at people and they ask me a question. Well, what does the church say about this? You've got a brain. Look it up. I mean, this is what we've come to in this country. Well, they repeat everything they hear on the news, and we don't even think anymore. And a lot of my book, Extreme Makeover, is about thinking. Okay, God gave us a brain. Let's start, and this is how we've been able to accept what our Holy Father talks about so beautifully, this dictatorship of relativism. In the last segment, we were talking about, okay, how can we have, in the one sense, laws that protect a woman and her unborn child if she's, you know, if she's hit by a drunk driver, and at the same time allow a woman to walk into an abortion mill through 9 months and kill that baby? I mean, this is, wait a minute. This is not common sense. This doesn't work. And how can we have facilities that will go in and just tell a woman she doesn't need any information, and yet any other doctor, any other type of surgical procedure, he could end up in a huge malpractice suit if he doesn't give that person every single detail on another type of operation. So all these things are what I try to get people to do, and I challenge people on the air, and I think we have to do that. We have to really keep pounding away at it to hopefully get people to think. But sometimes I just know from my own experience, I think we'd rather live in la-la land, because the more we know, the more we're responsible for. I mean, if you know the truth, you're going to be held responsible for
it. That's right. Ignorance is bliss, huh?
Right, exactly. I don't think we can get away with that anymore, though, given the amount of information we have available at our fingertips.
Right. We've been talking about abortion, the abortion distortion, you call it, the contraception,
yes.
contraception deception. Pornography is something that is a particular scourge these days. It's been around forever, but I think with the advent of the internet now, it has just exploded and come into people's lives in devastating ways. We usually associate pornography, especially the use of pornography, with men. Now, you have a lot to say to women. Your book is addressed to women. How does pornography fit into this whole cultural milieu?
Well, I think, you know, when I was blessed a few years ago to attend the Women's Congress that was held in Rome on the anniversary of JP2's Mulieris Dignitatum document on the dignity and vocation of women, and we had some wonderful presenters, and among them was Helen Alvary, who's just terrific, and she's a law professor. She's also a consultant to the Vatican, and she did a whole talk on this in terms of pornography, the culture of women, and she said some really interesting things that are worth pointing out, and then I mentioned in the book that we as in women have done a lot to add to our own objectification and thinking that we have to look like someone in a pornographic video or dress like someone on the cover of Cosmopolitan magazine. And I think that's very true. I'm appalled at the way I see some women dress in church. I'm appalled at what I see women going through in order to look or act a certain way. I'm appalled at the amount of sexual content and the attacks on women that groups like the National Organization for Women refuse to say anything about. They just sit there and let this happen over and over and over again. And so sometimes we women can be our own worst enemy. There's a new study that came out, which was just horrible. I don't know if you heard about it, but it came out in December, about more teen girls are getting involved in group sex. And it's 5 times higher among girls who have used or witnessed pornography. And then in addition to that, the boys who have been using pornography are then expecting the girls to act like something in that pornographic material that they've seen. But we've got it now, not just, for example, you mentioned it used to be, you know, on the corners and in the bookstores and things like that. We can get it right in our little iPhone 4 or Palm Pilot or whatever we have, our BlackBerry, or Android, but at the same time, we're seeing it in all forms of media, and another big area that we see is reality TV, which a lot of women actually watch, and we see these horrible, horrible displays, much of which I think could be either borderline pornographic or pornographic on some of these shows, such as Jersey Shore, Real Housewives. I mean, it's just absolutely disgusting. And there's other studies that show that women, there's another study that came out on reality TV, Parents Television Council did this one, on how women are their worst enemies toward each other on these shows because of the way they treat women, the way they refer to them, the type of exchanges that go on, the way they dress. And so in many ways, we are part of the problem. We're not taking control of these things. We're not taking control of the outlets. We're not taking control of ourselves. So we can't blame the men for everything. I think we have a lot to do with the problem that's out there right now.
Is this because women feel, if they're not somehow pretending to be clones of these pornographic images, that they're not going to be loved, they're not going to be accepted by men? What kind of thing? I mean, I'm asking you as a woman, what goes on in their heads to think that they have to do this?
Well, I think there's a combination of things. I think the bottom line is they don't know who they are in Christ. And if you don't have an identity and a relationship with God, then everything's off the table. Because that's, you know, for me, I was trying to fill my life, not with pornography, but with success, you know, with money and with, you know, trying to achieve that big story. And I found myself being like a gerbil on one of those little, you know, wheels going around and around and around and never finding true happiness. But I think for women that I've interviewed and the research that I've done in particular for this book is that there's so much pressure on them from so many different angles, from the professional world and, you know, from the social world in terms of, you know, trying to be all things to all people, and they're buying into all these messages because they're not tuned into God. The average adult consumes about 40 hours of media a week. The Kaiser Family Foundation says for kids it's about 53 hours a week. And by kids, I mean young people, people who are in their teens and their 20s. And so young women, young people are being influenced by the media.
40 hours?
40 hours for adults.
This was
media
what,
per week. Yeah.
This is what television and internet.
Television, internet, cell phones. This has been these. This is all.
You have
these
to
are
stay
all
up all night. You have to stay up all night to do that.
Well, they do. That's part of the problem. There's new studies coming out showing that kids are having sleeping problems, eating problems, problems in, with their studies because their parents allow them to be on their computer, on their laptop, or on their phones texting all night long. Well, there's dozens of studies on that. They've been out there for a while. So you're getting all these messages coming in consistently telling you you have to look this way, you have to act this way, you have to do this, this, that, or the other thing. And if you don't have a strong identity in yourself, you're gonna go looking for it elsewhere. And I think that's what I know. I'm speaking from personal experience.
Well, I was talking with Teresa Tomeo, and we're going to have to take another short break, Teresa, but we'll be back in just a moment to continue this wonderful discussion. Thanks.
The Colorado Catholic Herald's blog offers a chance for you to be heard on Catholic issues. Click on the red blog link at coloradocatholicherald.com and join the discussion. The Colorado Catholic Herald, bringing the Catholic world to you.
Today's episode of Bishop Sheridan Presents is archived at Colorado Catholic Herald Online. Just go to www.coloradocatholicherald.com and click on the audio video link on the left side, and you can listen to every episode of Bishop Sheridan Presents.
Welcome back. This is Bishop Sheridan. We're talking today with Teresa Tomeo, radio personality and author, and has a lot to say to all of us, but especially to women, about the culture in which we live. You know, we were talking just before the break, Teresa, about the need of some women to fulfill these almost pornographic fantasies that men have. I remember reading in your book, I thought it was astounding when I saw it, about, was it a college woman,
mm-hmm.
who was so surprised to hear that she really didn't have to sleep around? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah. That was an incident involving my friend, Dr. Pia De Seleni, who's a moral theologian. She shared that on my show. She was speaking at a college, and she was talking about chastity, and she was, you know, explaining and, you know, talking about the church and what the church, you know, had to offer women. And this young woman came up to her afterwards, and she was dumbfounded. She said, "You mean to tell me that I'm not expected to at least sleep with my boyfriend before I'm married?" It was a total concept, but she had a new concept she'd never heard before.
And this is because of the pressure of her own peers, is that it? Or?
Well, it's a combination. You know, every time you turn on the TV, there's something else about, you know, if it's not in the program, you've got Viagra commercials and commercials for Yaz, you know, all over the place. And, you know, so the message is that. And then if you don't have a strong family support, and if parents are just saying, oh, well, you know, just better safe than sorry, which unfortunately a lot of parents do, they grow up in an atmosphere where they're told that this is expected of them. You know, and so by the time they get to college, I mean, most kids are experimenting as young as, 11 and 12 years old now, unfortunately, with sex, various forms of it at various levels. So by the time these kids get to college, they're already, unfortunately, sexually experienced. And it's just very, very sad to me what's happening.
We've been mentioning a number of negative elements in our culture. How, and Teresa, you and people like you have done a great deal, I think, to try to engage the culture. I don't think you're just running around as a prophet of doom and castigating
everyone. No, not at all.
Yeah,
no.
we're trying to make sense out of this for people, I think.
Well, I think we are, and I think the church has the answer, and of course the fullness of the faith is in the church. But, you know, look, I do a lot of secular interviews, and I've been doing interviews nonstop since this book came out, and I'm on a lot of different shows, and I'm not sitting there telling people to throw out the computer or throw out the TV or throw out the radio. I make my living in the media, so that would be pretty hypocritical. But what I am telling people is that they better, you know, wake up and smell the cappuccino, that this is powerful stuff, and it's having a huge impact on us. And parents especially have to be very serious about taking control of the media outlets in their home and coming up with guidelines and understanding and having the process process to be able to discern right from wrong and to help children filter what's coming at them, which is why when we have documents like the World Communications Day statement that the Holy Father just put out on silence, it's a fabulous resource. So, I don't think the media are all bad. The church is not saying that either, but women have gotten caught up in this media-saturated culture, and Jesus has been so... One of the things that just drives me crazy, if you think I'm passionate now, when people start, you know, throwing darts at the church and also at Jesus, that just, you know, that gets my Italian up, and I just go ballistic, because I know what Jesus did and does for me, and to call the church oppressive and to call Jesus an oppressor is just evil, and they've got it completely wrong.
I'd like you to talk about Jesus, because that's a big thing in your book. It's not just about what's wrong with our culture. It's very much about your own faith and your own relationship with Jesus and how that relationship is the antidote for all of this.
Well, you know, he's been with me forever, and he is with all of us, of course, but it's funny because he never really left me. Even when I fell away, he was always there, and my mother bought me a beautiful statue of Jesus as a child on my first communion, and I kept that statue with me, and I still have it under my pillow, believe it or not, and I always thought that I took it from dorm to dorm, apartment to apartment, home to home, and now after 30 years of marriage, it's still with me, and to me, that's a sign that, you know, where he says in the end of the Gospel of Matthew, "Lo, I'm with you always until the end of the age," and he really is, and that to me is just one of the things that I love about the Lord. He's there for us in so many different ways. But one of the things that I discovered in my own walk back to the church was studying Scripture, and I started out in Protestant Bible studies because, unfortunately, 17, 18 years ago, at least in my home archdiocese, there wasn't that much to offer from the Catholic Church. It's changed dramatically here, but when I was first coming back to the church, we didn't have a Catholic Bible study that I could go to. But what I did was I would read the Bible, and then I would try to look up church documents, you know, to see what the church had to say about it. And I was half thrilled and half angry because I just didn't get it for so long. It wasn't that I was angry at the church or anything. I just didn't know the beauty or the depth of it. And then when I started to read the Gospels, and especially the Gospel of John, and I get into this very heavily in the book in terms of the way Jesus treated women. Every time he is talking to a woman, it's a serious conversation. It's not like, oh, what are we having for dinner tonight? It is about salvation. It's about the living water. It's about Mary has chosen the wiser of the two. You know, he's talking to Mary Magdalene after the... I mean, these are just incredibly profound conversations. And yet it's very frustrating to me because the world shows Jesus as if he's some sort of, as I said earlier, an oppressor of women. And when I started really understanding who God was and the way he treated women truly and how we were both, you know, men and women created in his image and likeness, it was like a whole revelation to me. And I get really frustrated when I hear these so-called Catholic theologians saying that, you know, Jesus is an oppressor of women because he was so far ahead, again, of men in his own time. He treated women with dignity, treated them as equals, which just wasn't something that they did back 2,000 years ago. So I think, again, if people connect the dots and really open their hearts and their minds and ask the Lord, especially women, to show himself to them, it'll be just a beautiful revelation. It'll open up a whole new world to them.
It seems clear to me, Teresa, that what you're saying is that we don't, that we need Christ. We're not going to take care of these cultural deficiencies just through sociological and other kinds of means. We need God, and of course Pope Benedict constantly says this. It's those lives, those cultures without God that are literally on the road to destruction.
Well, yeah, and if you look at what's happening in the world, you know, all you have to do is look outside at how natural law plays itself out. You know, we were talking about all these different statistics about contraception, abortion, sexually transmitted diseases. Well, that's occurring in society, but it goes back to exactly what God says, that there's a plan. So if medical science, sociology, all these things that we know in terms of adoption, with, you know, in same-sex marriage of children and things like that, if we know there are problems that we're seeing in these things play themselves out, then maybe we should stop and think, well, where does this originally come from in terms of a plan for mankind? But see, we don't want to think about that, because if we stop and think that there is a God who's organized all this, then that's going to cause us to have more responsibility. And I really think, just from my own experience, that's the key. So if we can explain it away somehow, like some of these very prominent new atheists sit there and say, well, you know, being good to each other and the common good has developed over time. you can't say that in the same sentence as saying when nothing but atoms floating around. And you can't also say that you love someone if we're just nothing but a bunch of atoms floating around. You can't have it both ways. Dr. and Father Spitzer talks about this all the time. I mean, I'm not a physicist or a philosopher, but you know, I'm a pretty smart lady, but again, it's not rocket science. You can't have it both ways. All these things that we have in our society, the law, you know, the speed limits, the stop signs, the red lights, drunk driving laws against murder, where do they come from? If you look back at the legal system, and any attorney worth his or her salt will tell you this, that it comes from the Ten Commandments. I mean, this is just common sense, and we've gotten so far away from that because we want to make our own rules. We want to be God, and we want to make the determination, and we can't do it. My favorite verse in the entire Bible is John 15:5. I am the vine, you are the branches. If a man abides in me, he will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. I mean, look at the mess we've made of things. I mean, it's just, let's look at the destruction and then look back at God. I mean, Pope Benedict said this to young people right after he began his pontificate in 2005. Actually, he was speaking to an ecclesial congress and telling them to tell the young people this. It must be expressed to them that God and the Ten Commandments are not a big no, but a yes to love and to life. God isn't some big, mean ogre with a white beard wanting to squash our fun. I mean, he wants us to have the abundant life, John 10:10. The problem is that we think it's all about us, and we want to do it our way, and it doesn't work.
Pope Benedict's message that you just gave there is something I like to present to young people in confirmation homilies too. I remember also his telling young people, don't be afraid of Christ. He's not coming to take your life apart, but to give you the fullness of life. And I think he does place a lot of it, we're afraid. We're just afraid to open our hearts to Christ.
Well, I can understand that original fear. I mean, I was there, but at the same time, you know, once my life started to turn around and God started to show me the plan little by little that he had for my life, I mean, Your Excellency, I could never imagine me being interviewed by a bishop on a Catholic show. I could never imagine me being all over the country with my show in 200 markets. I could never imagine writing books. I thought the be-all and end-all for my life. I thought I was all that in a bag of chips when I finally made it on the big local station in my hometown, which is a very, very prominent station. I thought, this is it. I'm here. You know, I was doing some freelance work for ABC. I was doing some stuff for AP. Look at me. Aren't I incredible? Now he has me all over the world. Now, God will take what you have. When he gives you a gift, you're supposed to give it back. But if you open up your heart to him, he's going to show you a plan, and it's going to be bigger and better than you ever imagined. But we tend to, you know, the devil that we know is better than the devil that we don't know, and we want to stay in our little comfort zone. But God has a much bigger plan for us and a much better one.
Teresa Tobio, what a tremendous apostle you are. Great spokeswoman on behalf of, the natural law, the teaching of Christ also, and what we believe, we know it. We know who we are as human beings, and the church teaches this, the natural law, and it is. There's a certain simplicity to it if we would just take it seriously and not be afraid. Thanks so much for being with us. I want to mention again your new book, addressed to women, but I read it and I thought it was great. Extreme Makeover, Women Transformed by Christ, Not Conformed to the Culture. Ignatius Press is the publisher, and you can find that book in Catholic bookstores. Would you say Amazon also?
Amazon, Ignatius.com, and also my website, TeresaTomio.com.
And looking at, quite frankly, the fight we've got ahead of us in the year to come, I think it's very important that Catholics get a hold of this book. It gives them a lot of very good information and help to understand just why we teach and believe what we do as Catholics. So thanks again, Teresa, and we're going to just close out our program today. You asked me to say a little prayer for you and for your husband, Dominic, correct?
Mm-hmm, correct.
So, and then we'll do that and end with my usual blessing. Heavenly Father, with thanksgiving for the gift of Teresa Tomio to the church and to the world, I ask that you bless her and her husband, Dominic, in a very special way. Dominic, who is preparing for ordination as a deacon in the church, continue to guide Teresa in her beautiful apostolate, her ministry as apostle of your son, Jesus Christ. And I ask God to bless her, her husband, and all of our listeners, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen. Thanks, Teresa.
Thank you, Your Excellency. God bless you.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to Bishop Sheridan Presents on the Catholic Radio Network. Join us each week as Bishop Michael Sheridan of the Diocese of Colorado Springs discusses topics relevant to your life and your faith. Bishop Sheridan Presents is a production of the Catholic Radio Network and the Diocese of Colorado Springs. If there is a topic that you'd like to hear covered by Bishop Sheridan Presents, please call the Catholic Radio Network at 970-669-8000. Thanks again for listening to Bishop Sheridan Presents, brought to you by the Colorado Catholic Herald, the official newspaper of the Diocese of Colorado Springs.
Today's episode of Bishop Sheridan Presents is archived at Colorado Catholic Herald online. Just go to www.coloradocatholicherald.com and click on the audio video link on the left side, and you can listen to every episode of Bishop Sheridan Presents.